All right, ladies. So I'm going to go ahead and start us off because we are at the half hour and we've got a lot to cover tonight. So I think we'll have some more sisters joining us in a second here, but I'm going to go ahead and get the introduction round started. So tonight's a really, really special call. As you all know, if you've been getting my emails where I've been blasting you with my excitement about Jessica and Paige being our amazing teachers and guest speakers this evening. I think we can all use to learn more about our financial savvy and financial goals. And these two ladies have graciously offered to support us with some knowledge and some wisdom and some actionable steps that we can take to improve our financial literacy and our financial futures. So I am super, super excited about this. And we're going to start out, as we do with every call, with an introduction round, and we're going to keep it brief tonight because there is a lot of ground to cover. So I invite each of you to maybe 30 seconds or so for your intro, and we'll keep passing the baton and I'll facilitate. And then after that, Paige and Jessica are going to go ahead and get started with their presentations. So for those of you who are new or haven't been here for a while, I'll kind of walk you through the intro round super easy. So the name of the game here is that we all want to get to know each other and get a sense of where we're at all over the world or all over the country. And as best we can, sense where everybody's at energetically and just kind of land together in this virtual space, in this digital space, so that we can feel comfortable and cozy, getting super vulnerable and stretchy about money stuff. So, intro, I invite you to share your name, where you're located, something that you're grateful for today, and what are your financial concerns around investing and/or saving? So, if there's anything specific that you are concerned about, curious about, even about investing and saving, you're welcome to offer that up as your fourth question there. So I'll go ahead and start the round. First of all, sound check. Can everyone hear me and see me clearly? We cool? All right, awesome. So I'm Fawn and I'm in Jalapa, Mexico. I'm back in my second home, third home, for a few months, I think, and it's really nice to be home. It's beautiful. It's just really nice to be landed after so much travel. So that's where I am. And I'm grateful because I just a few moments ago walked out of my office to go downstairs and get some coffee, actually. And there were fireflies everywhere. There's like these lightning bugs floating around in the jungle. And I just stood there like I was in Fern Gully and it was like I just had a moment. So grateful for that. And my financial concerns around investing and saving, I just don't know what information to trust anymore. So I think that's something that I would like to learn is like the litmus test around what advice do I listen to and what advice is noise, right? Or just, not accurate. So I'll go ahead and pass the baton to Ashley.
Hey everyone. I'm Ashley. I'm in Los Angeles. And then something I'm grateful for today is my workout today. There's just a lot of awesome people and they've in the where I work out and they have a nice community of people. And it was my first weekend or first workout in 2 weeks because of travel and some craziness going on in my life. So I'm grateful for that. It was nice to get moving today. And financial concerns. I've invested and saved for, for a good, I don't know, it's, I don't know, 8, 7 years now that I've been in a position to do it. But now that I'm in this period of transition, it's how do you continue saving and keep up your investments when you aren't making the income that you are used to making? Or that I was used to making when I was able to save and invest in the stock market or whatever. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's a relatability for a lot of the women in the tribe who make the transition from corporate or from like, being employed to being entrepreneurs. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Thank you. And congrats on your wedding and your honeymoon. Yay.
It
Welcome home.
was so fun.
Awesome. Jasmine, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The controls won't show up when I move my mouse for some reason.
Oh.
So I don't know. That's okay. I think I can right click and mute and unmute. I'm Jasmine. I am coming at you from Northwestern New Jersey. I am grateful for being off today for Teachers Convention and not going to Atlantic City for the convention. So I just get 2 days with my babies. And by that, I mean I drop them off for half the day so I could get things done and take some jazz time. And we also visited the new shop right in Newton, big Sussex County adventure. Concerns over investing and saving. I am in a place where I know nothing, but I think I also try to consume as much information as possible. So I know a little bit, and I never feel like I am spot on with understanding my allocations and diversifications and when to readjust and how often. And I don't want to play the market or try to time it, but I don't know, how do I make sure all the different holdings that I have are accurately allocated? That's really difficult because I'm not in finance and I know nothing, even though I try.
Thanks for that. Yeah, who can relate to Jasmine? Like, doing our best to know, but still pretty unclear. Yeah, thanks, Jazz. Laura, welcome to the group calls. Oh my goodness. So tonight we have a couple of new members, and then we have Amora, who has been working with me for almost like 8 months or something. And I'm like, come join us, because she's so freaking awesome. And I'm so grateful that you are here with us tonight. Like, yeah. So hi, Amora. Introduce yourself.
Hi. You're so sweet. I'm thrilled to be here. It's always hard to get to these calls. So thanks for having me. I am physically located in Connecticut. My heart is in Los Angeles, Ashley, so we could talk. Hi. I am located in Connecticut. I am grateful for the ability to be, have my heart in Los Angeles and my body to be in Connecticut. It's way deep. It's too much. But for financial stuff, I think for me, I totally jive with Jasmine and Fawn. Like, I think I know a bunch. I'm really frugal. I save a lot. I just bought a second house, which feels very bougie to say, by the way. I have a house in Los Angeles and I have a house in Connecticut. So, you know, I'm good. Not at all. It's so bougie. But you know, just saving and being ahead of the game for my kid and for the ability to say, if I ever want to, you know, fuck it. I'm going to go traveling with Fawn on the Sea of Cortez.
Hell yes, you are.
Exactly. So that's it. That's me.
Thanks, Maura. Yeah. And congrats on your second house. That's exciting. All right. So I'm seeing Amy's here. So Amy's one of our new tribe sisters. Welcome. So happy to have you. I'm going to unmute you and then you are go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Pennsylvania, pretty close to Jersey. So I literally like just joined with Fawn like, I don't know, a week ago, if that even. So I am freshly new and super excited. I'm grateful for having to, you know, having found Fawn on, you know, just kind of on the internet, just kind of searched life coaches, and she was really like top of the line. So I'm grateful for that. And as far as finance goes, it's funny because I actually work for a finance company and I really feel like I know nothing about finance. I am in a little bit of debt. So I'm just, you know, I know it's not going to stay. I know I'm going to get myself out of it, but I just, you know, I need to know just the basics, really, I feel like, just how to save and how to kind of separate, you know, what's important, what's not important, what kind of things I should be focusing on as far as savings. And, you know, I have three kids and they all have accounts and I have a multitude of savings accounts and different things like that. And I just need some guidance as far as what to do with them all and how to better save for debt and pay off debt. So the basics.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. And it looks like the other, whoever else was calling in, hopped off. So let's go ahead and I'm going to hand the baton/mic/spotlight over to Paige and Jessica. I have known both of you for almost a year and a half, if not 2 years now, I think, unless my time clock is off. But both of you are so amazing, and I'm so honored that they are willing to share of their expertise and wisdom and advice, because as we all now can kind of tune in with each other in knowing, we sure could know a lot more, or at least like more quality information and guidance. So I'll go ahead and hand the baton over to you, Paige, and you are welcome to take it from there.
Okay. So my name is Paige. As Fawn mentioned, I work in the finance industry. I am reaching out to you from sunny California, where it's actually not very sunny because of daylight savings. So still getting used to that time change. And I do want to express my gratitude. I've had an awesome day and an awesome week. And it's all because of some of my women tribe here in Sacramento. And I'm just super grateful for them. I've made some really good girlfriends in the last couple of months since I started a meetup group out here, a Women's Wine Club. And it's just been a super, super awesome group and a super awesome support for me. And so I wanted to express that gratitude since that's what we're doing. And I first started working with Fawn, a year and a half ago. I think it was May of 2018. And I was in a transition period, like so many of us. And I was totally unhappy in my job. I had spent 7 years in college and 2 years studying for an exam to do a career that I wasn't happy in. And so she helped me when I was getting ready to leave that job. And 2 weeks later, I lost that job. Half the law firm had been laid off because the business owner couldn't afford to keep us anymore. And so it was really perfect timing. I had reached out to her, and then I was kind of forced to transition earlier than I had wanted. But I'm extremely happy for her support and the fact that I've had her for an ally over the last year and a half. So thank you, Fawn, for organizing this call and providing this space for us to come together. It's very powerful to have this community and this tribe and the sisterhood. And I am just super grateful to be here with you guys tonight. So in my role, I am a financial advisor with New York Life. I help clients create financial plans to suit their future goals. I'm also a licensed attorney. I have experience in wills, estates, and trusts, and I also have experience in business planning. So I do work with a lot of business owners. I do a lot of succession planning. I do a lot of tax strategy. And I do a lot of retirement planning, and that seemed to be a pretty big theme for tonight. And also, when we had that debt management call that Jessica led a few months ago, a lot of people said that they had questions over retirement planning. That seemed to be a top priority. And so one of the things that I do with my clients, and you know, I ask a lot of questions. There's a lot of psychology that goes behind making a financial plan and sticking with it, and having goals as far as putting money aside every month. And a couple of you mentioned, you know, I have debt that I need to pay off. How do I balance investing, but also paying off that debt? And you really have to think about, you know, you need to pay yourself first. This is something that is going to happen eventually. You're going to have to live off an income that you've accumulated over your life. People spend more time planning their vacations than they do retirement, but retirement is really the longest vacation you'll ever have. So it's a pretty serious thing. And so a lot of what I do, like I said, is asking questions and understanding why this is so important to my clients. And that's the first thing I ask is, what brought you here? Why are you here? And why is it so important that you get your finances here and settled today? And so before I dive into all the good stuff, I am going to ask that we do a quick exercise. And we're going to take 2 minutes and think about what our money story is. And I want you guys to imagine what your future financial self is like. And you don't have to share this if you don't want to. But just think about what your financial future is like, and what are some steps in your money story that haven't happened yet. Are you retired at 65? Are you traveling the world debt-free? For me, I would really like to live it up with a hunky cowboy in Montana on a ranch. And that's part of my big why. So I want you guys to all take some time, and we're just going to take 2 minutes. Feel free to write it down or just close your eyes and take a look at what your financial future looks like.
Is this the ideal financial future page, or is this the financial future? Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, just a few more seconds. All right, looks like a few of you are done. So typically when I sit down with my clients, this is a verbal conversation we're having together. They're expressing this to me because of the group and the venue. I'm going to open it up if anybody wants to share, if they have something that just really moves them and really stirs them into action, into understanding why they're doing what they're doing, why it's okay to, you know, cut out the Starbucks coffee for a few months because you have something bigger in your life. And so I just wanted to open it up if anybody wants to share, what their big why is. Jasmine, did you raise your hand? Okay, let's see. There we go. Yes.
Okay, yeah, Fawn, I think you might have to control me.
Oh, sorry.
I think when kids came into the picture, the forefront of the financial goal became making sure that we had enough to provide not only the big ticket items like education and helping them with some of the bigger financial purchases they'll have to make, like a first home, because I think that's what really sets somebody up to be able to progress, but also just the experiences that we want to have or them to have throughout their lives. We want to be able to take them and do things with them. And we live in like a small rural part of New Jersey, which we love, but we want to make sure they get exposure and like we travel with them and like we want them to experience life. I mean, we want to experience life. So I think that's probably number one right now. And then equal or secondary is just like generally money worry free, not having to think about what we have later in life, because we'll have enough and we'll be able to do and be and not even have to think about it. I like can have someone clean my house once a week, every week, forever, and probably hire an assistant to like do all the things that are not things I want to be doing because I just want to be playing. Probably be number one and two.
No, that's a really, I'm glad you brought that up. So that's something I call dignity of discretion. So being able to have that freedom and have that ability to have the discretion to do things that cost money later on in life. So mm-hmm. that's a really good point, having that freedom and also able to have your kids have those experiences. So that's very good. Yeah.
I always think that the main goal for everyone, if you boil it down, is like, don't we all just want freedom of time and money? Mm-hmm. Like, you want financial freedom and you want freedom of time to choose. Mm-hmm. That's like what it always comes down to for me. Yeah. However, I can get both of those things.
Good. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Anybody else want to share one more? Nope. Okay. So I'll get into the meat. Yeah, that's, I think, Jasmine, you really touched on it, is we want to have a lifestyle. We have an expectation of a lifestyle when we get older. And a lot of you said, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to even begin. And this is something that I've gone through myself. I think a lot of people go through it. They definitely don't teach this in high school or most college classes. What is it going to take to have this lifestyle that I want in the future? And so the first tool that I'm going to go over, so this is something that I use with my clients, and I'm doing it through a visual PowerPoint to help you understand a little bit more through illustrations and also some hypotheticals. And before I get into it, I do want to stress that, this type of planning, financial planning, retirement planning, planning for, kids' college or travel expenses, it's all individual to the person. Everybody is going to have a different plan as far as how they're going to reach their goals. Everybody has different goals. So while I am using examples, I'm using some averages. Just keep in mind that these numbers might not necessarily apply to you, but the formula that I'm about to show you and the concepts I'm about to show you will apply. All right. So this first thing that I'm going to show you, it's what we call the financial EKG. So this is something that, and I'm going to switch over to the slides. All right. Can you guys see that? Perfect. Thank you. So this is the financial EKG. So this was something that the company I work for developed back in the 80s, and they did this to show doctors where they are as far as their finances go, where they are on the money timeline. And just as the EKG in the medical field, it shows you the condition of your heart, the financial EKG is showing you the condition of where you are on your retirement timeline. And so there's two areas that we're gonna look at when we're thinking of where we are as far as our wealth goes. And so on this, you're gonna see that there are two boxes, and this is the financial EKG worksheet. So on the left side, you're going to see, we're calling it the accumulation phase. So this is when you enter the workforce, say you enter at 20, 25, you're fresh out of college, you're entering in at the accumulation phase. Just zoomed in. Okay. And then the other side is going to be the conservation or the distribution phase. So we're looking at entering the workforce right here. We're going to be retiring at this line right here. And at that point, we're going to be in what we call the conservation phase or the distribution phase. So this is when you'll be taking money out for retirement. And during the accumulation phase, there's two ways that we're making money. The first way is going to be money at work, or sorry, people at work. And that's going to be, we go to work, we clock in, we're making money, we're putting a percentage of that paycheck away to some type of investment plan, either a 401k or a Roth. And we're having, we're working physically to accumulate this money. And then the other side of that is when you do start to accumulate and you start to build up that 401k or the Roth or whatever investment vehicle you're in, you're getting money at work. And so as you progress through this accumulation phase, you should start to have more money at work. At the beginning, it's going to be just you. You don't have anything saved up just yet. And then as you progress, when you get to about halfway, you should have about half of the money accumulation coming from your money growing itself. So the problem, and this is something that is with about 95% of the clients that come in and meet with me, is that the line goes something like that. They haven't really been educated on how much they need in retirement. They, will attend a seminar or they'll start talking with a financial advisor, and then they realize, okay, I need to start saving a little bit more. I need to amp it up a little bit. And one of two things can happen. Either they can start saving more or start, investing, and they do a little bit more than they've been doing or a lot more, and they're able to catch up to their retirement age. Alternatively, if they decide not to contribute more, they can push out their retirement age a little bit further. Okay. So we're going to use an example, and this is going to show you how to calculate how much money you need in retirement. You're going to have a bucket of money that you're going to be drawing from during this conservation phase. But how do we know how much money we need? Is there a magic number? Is there a magic formula? Am I just going to retire at 65 and have an income of whatever they decide to give me, my pension or my 401k? And so this tool really allows you to customize and understand exactly how much you're going to need if you want to retire at a certain age and how much you're going to have to contribute each month. And so the formula, it's like I said, it applies to anybody, but there are a couple variables that you can change. So in this example, we're going to start at our age of this example person is going to be 40. Their desired retirement age is 65. So this is going to give them 25 years to accumulate that bucket of money that they're going to need when they go to retire. So another variable that is dependent on everybody is each person has their own current income. So in this example, it'll be $80,000. And then you need to decide, what is your desired retirement income? And this goes back to what we were just doing with the visualizations. What does your ideal financial future look like? What kind of lifestyle do you have? Are you traveling the world? Are you living comfortably in a shack with very low expenses? It really is going to depend on the person. And so this is something that you can manipulate. You know, are you comfortable living off a lesser income? Do you think, you know, well, in retirement, it's basically like a weekend all week long. Are you going to be going out and spending money? Are you going to be doing, the things that at least I tend to do on the weekends? And typically I'm spending more money on the weekends than I do during the week. So a lot of people, you know, they want to have more money in retirement, especially if they're taking up any type of hobbies like golfing or boating or whatever people like to do these days. So in this example, we're going to go with $60,000 for a desired retirement income. So the next step here, and follow with me, we're going to take, so basically, let me scoot back a little bit. When we get to this age, say it's 65, we want to be drawing out $60,000 per year in retirement income. So what amount of money needs to be right here? So we're going to take an estimated rate of return during your accumulation phase. So what rate of return are your investments getting? What return are you getting on average on your overall investments? And we're going to go with 8%, which is fairly conservative, but we want to make sure that it's a reasonable rate. And then the next rate of return is what rate are we getting in the conservation phase? So we're in retirement. We need to focus more on preserving the principal, preserving the capital. We're not going to be as risky as when we are younger and have time to accumulate. So we're going to go with a 5% expected rate of return on your investments when you're withdrawing the money at retirement. All right. So how do we calculate what this bag of money looks like? So the goal is that when you enter retirement, your income is coming from the interest on your investments. And I'm going to say that again. In retirement, when you start retirement, you want to be withdrawing income for the interest on your investments. So if you wanted to draw $60,000 a year, that is at a 5% rate. $60,000 is 5% of $1.2 million. So this is going to be the bucket of money that you need in retirement. Looks like a lot. And there's something that I haven't mentioned yet, and that's going to be inflation, and I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. But for now, we're just going to look at this $120,000. So somebody wants to make $60,000 in desired retirement income every year. They're getting a 5% return. It's going to be $1.2 million. Now, are they going to need $60,000 a year forever? Are they going to need to have this beyond a certain period of time? Well, you know, eventually you're going to die. This is going to be a limited period of time where you're drawing out the income. And so you don't need to have it forever, but this is where inflation comes in. So I'm going to see by a show of hands, has anybody heard of the rule of 72? Yes. Got two people. Okay, awesome. So the rule of 72, it tells you how long it takes for your money to double at a certain percentage. And it also works inversely to show you how long it would take for your money to be cut in half as far as the purchasing power goes. So we're going to do the calculation with this example. So this person is like I said, getting $60,000 in retirement income annually. But we have to account for inflation. So if we take a conservative inflation rate, we're going to go with 4%, 2, 3, 4%. You can use whichever number you want. But for this example, we're going to go with 72, or sorry, we're going to go with 4% into 72. And that comes up with 18. So in 18 years, $60,000 will have a purchasing power equivalent of $30,000. So you retire at 65, 18 years later, that $60,000 you're drawing out every year is the equivalent of $30,000. So even though you started off at, you know, just using the interest on that 1.2 in the beginning, eventually you're going to have to tap into the principal because the purchasing power of that money coming out is going to go down. So that's why we do this calculation where you're calculating how much money do I need if I want to live off the interest, because eventually that interest isn't going to be enough and you do have to tap into the principal. You're going to have to tap into that 1.2. All right. So the next piece of this is how much is it going to take every year? Say this person hasn't really started saving very much yet. They have 25 years to get to this bucket of 1.2. And their money is going to be growing at, we said, 8% in the accumulation phase. So how long is it going to take to get to 1.2 million with an 8% return? So the answer is $1,367. So if this person just started saving for retirement at 40, they're going to need to put in $1,367 a month to reach that 1.2 million at age 65. Now say they started sooner, they started saving at 35, or say they decided to push it out 5 years. So they're adding 5 years to that accumulation. That's going to take it down to 882. So this is, it's a really good way to show that, you know, there are things that you can do. You could change your desired retirement income. You could change how long you're saving for. You know, we always think of 65 as the retirement age. Well, that's been the retirement age for decades now, but people are living longer and it's a completely different world than it was before. And a lot of people are pushing retirement to 70 or 75. So it really puts it into perspective, how long do I have to accumulate and what do I need to do if I want to retire at a certain age? So if we go the other way and say this person waits 5 years, they wait until they're 45, then they'll need to contribute $2,185 a month. And there's three variables I want to point out that you can change in this example. So the years to accomplish goal, this is one that you can adjust. The desired retirement income, and then also the anticipated rate of return. So these are the three variables that you can adjust to fit your numbers. Say you wanted to do riskier investments, it would actually take less time to get to that 1.2 million. Or say you wanted to be more conservative in the distribution phase, it's going to adjust the numbers as well. So that's the financial EKG. It's not a very comfortable exercise. It's actually meant to, move people to action and understanding and putting some perspective and some actual concrete numbers on what their goals are. And I hope that this gives you an idea of, you know, where you need to go as far as when you want to retire. Like I said, it's not it's not always comfortable for C. It is a lot of money that you need to be putting away. But I think thinking about your why and thinking about this this thing that's driving us to have these lifestyles that we want, it's really important to understand that if you're not paying yourself first, you're not going to get paid. And I understand debt. I still have a student loan that I'm paying off. It's a beast, and you really want to, a lot of times, want to pay that off immediately. But financial decisions, it's a lot of psychology. It's a lot of, making decisions based on emotion, and, sometimes just putting the money aside and it out of sight, out of mind. And then you can have that as kind of like it's a required expense that I need to put aside every month. And it really is a lifestyle and a perspective change. And so that is the EKG, and I'm going to open it up for questions now and stop share on here. And I'm hoping that was helpful. I hope that it wasn't too confusing with all of the numbers. Yes, I think it's Maura, right? Okay, can you unmute her, Fawn?
Did I do it or did you do it? Am I there?
Yes, you're here. I can hear you.
I just wanted to say one thing that I had a meeting with a financial planner once, and I just know that women, we tend to want to care about other people first. So that's a one thing that's really hard to put that money away. And the thing that this young, like 32-year-old man who had not a care in the world, because he was a financial planner in Los Angeles, like wearing an amazing suit, and he was ridiculously handsome, so I sort of wanted to punch him. But he said one thing when we talked about goals, when you say, and I think Jazz said this, like your goal is to take care of your kids and like help them with their college or their education. And he said, they will always be able to earn, you won't. And I was like, oh, what a sexist, ageist bastard. But it's sort of right? Your kids are always going to have an opportunity to either borrow or get a scholarship or earn. And we're going to hit a point where, as much as we want to care about other people and take care of other people, we are not. So we do have to reprioritize that putting money away to build the bucket. So that's just one thing that always resonated with me. I was first super offended, and then was like, well, he's kind of right. Like, at some point the earning potential will be gone for everyone. We're all going to die and all the rest of it. But so I think that's a super important thing to put into that bucket.
That's a really, really good point. And also, women are living longer, so we're going to need more long-term care. We're going to need more money in that bucket because we're going to have more years that we're drawing it out. But you're 100% right. You know, I work with a lot of women, and we do take care of others. I take care of others. I was paying off my ex's debt before I paid off my debt. Like, who does that? But it's what we do. Yeah, exactly. We do that, right? So thank you. That's a really good point.
Yeah. I just want to highlight, Paige, I really liked what you said. It's a lifestyle and perspective change. And I really, really appreciate that you said that, because it's about willpower and discipline, but ultimately, like, it's a choice that we get to make. And I appreciate that you highlighted that.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. Any other questions, comments? Is anybody surprised by these numbers? Show of hands. Is this more than you think that you'd need to save away? Nope. Okay. Well, I think my time is actually almost up, so I am going to wrap it up with that. I had one more tool that I was going to share with you guys, but I don't think we'll have enough time for that, unfortunately.
I think you should share.
Share it?
This is a good mix of knowledge in their group. So I'm going to cut some of my stuff out, and then you have a lot of value to add.
Okay. All right, let me load this up.
Jazz, did you have a question? I'm going to unmute you.
I am your master.
Can you hear me? Yeah. So when you just when you said you were, your time was up, the first question that came to mind was, as far as reaching out to like a professional, we're inundated. We're in like content shock all the time, I feel like. So reaching out to professionals is very hard because it's, we don't know the person. And even sometimes when we get a referral, unless we know where the referral is coming from and how that person is actually financially doing, I'm like hyper critical and questioning of, do you really think they're good, or are they just playing you? And are you really paying a 4% fee and you don't even know it because it's hidden? Right. And so I got duped when I first entered education. It's unfortunate. Like a lot of teachers are like sheep to the 403B plan. And I didn't understand what an annuity was because they say annuity like really fast. And then they just talk about investments. And I did a whole bunch of research in this past year, but I'm still struggling to find a place in which I can go to find a financial advisor that like I can trust, that I can be with and work with for a really long time. I've like evaluated other financial planners online, but every time I talk to them, I just come away with the same feeling like, I don't know you. I can't trust you. I like your certification, but like, how do I know to choose you between everybody else? And with Vanguard, you know, it's nice if you have a certain amount of money with them. If it's over $50,000, you can get advising for like 0.33%. But like to have a financial planner who's not only looking at your investments, but also your estate, but also your 403B, but also your husband's 401k that's not through Vanguard, and your 529s, like you really need somebody who can look at your whole picture. So yeah. My question is to you, how do I find someone?
That is a
great question. Are you the person? Can you be my person? Gone. So I don't know.
No, that's an amazing question. And that's actually something Jessica and I were going to touch on later on if we had more time. And I think we can touch on that now, Jessica. That's okay. I think you're right on. Like we are so saturated with information. How do we know what's legitimate? How do we know who's, you know, not going to rip us off? And I think, you know, referrals are a very, very good way to find a trusted financial professional. But make sure you trust the person that you're asking and you know that they genuinely had a good experience, and still do your research. But I would say that's a good spot to start. You know, understand the type of advisor that they are. You know, even at my company, we have a variety of people in different capacities. Some of them focus on life insurance. Some of them are doing, you know, long-term planning with mutual funds and investments. And then some are just day traders. So you really need to, it sounds like what you're looking for is somebody to do more comprehensive planning, to look at like a macro approach at your assets and your finances, and also just to make sure that you're doing everything that you should be doing. And so there are, I mean, it's really tough because I will say, you know, you can look at the financial strength of a company and that will tell you, you know, are your products going to go bankrupt someday? So that's great and all, but how do I know that the person I'm working with is actually giving me the advice that they should be giving me? And it's difficult to know. I would suggest looking at how they're being compensated. Are they working on a fee base? Are they doing just a, you know, a percentage of assets under management, which it sounds like you're referring to with Vanguard? You know, are they compensated on certain products? And is that going to be a conflict of interest if they're pushing something on me that I feel isn't to my benefit?
Right.
So, you know, there's no real easy way to find the right person and make sure you're not getting duped. I think it's a lot of research. It's, you know, ask them a lot of questions. And I think what might be helpful is maybe if we send something out after the call for, you know, the types of questions that you would ask a financial advisor when you sit down with them. I think that might be a helpful thing to send out. And you know, I honestly prefer to work with other women. you know, it's not that all men are bad or that thing, but you know, I tend to trust women more than men, and I feel like I can sense, you know, the genuine and the empathy when I'm working with them. And you know, there's always the internet, but we can't really trust anything we see on the internet. But I do think that there are some resources out there that would help lead you in the right direction as far as, you know, looking at referrals. I know I found Fawn online and I am super happy. And there are so many life and purpose coaches out there or career coach, like they're it's totally inundated out there, but I saw all of her, you know, the referrals that she had asked for. You can tell that, you know, she's responding to my emails right away. She's taking this very seriously. She's very diligent. She really, really cares about her business. So, you know, that would be red flags for me too. Is this person, you know, they're not responding to my calls, or are they not listening to what my needs are? It's a process, and you're probably going to meet with somebody multiple times before you know if you're going to work with them. Mm-hmm. I had a client, her daughter just bought a car online and was scammed. And I was like, well, you bought the car online. what do you expect? I'm sorry. Like that's a little sketchy. And she's, you know, her first car, she just turned 18 not that long ago. And I feel horrible about the situation, but it's, you know, you really have to do your research and, have that face to face, get the vibe, you know, does it seem like they're the right fit? Do you like their energy? You like what they're saying? If you need tough love, it sounds like that 32-year-old, the 32-year-old advisor we were talking about earlier was saying, well, yeah, but you know, your earning potential is going to go away and theirs isn't. And we might not want to hear it, but we need to hear it. Yeah. So it really has to be the right fit as well. Personally, I like someone to be a disciplinarian. I like them to call me out on my shit and be honest with me. I don't need you to hold my hand and tell me that I'm doing okay. Like, I want you to be a drill sergeant. And so that's something else that you need to take into consideration too. So it is personal. But you know, I would ask around, ask, you know, friends that have financial advisors, coworkers, and just go meet with people and talk to them. And we can send out some questions for you guys to have those ready if you do meet with somebody.
Yeah. I need to broaden my network of people, because right now my financial circle is not who I want referrals from.
Okay.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's like a certain level of person that I want to connect with to make financial decisions, and I don't have any of those people in my life.
Got it.
So I don't know. Maybe the tribe.
You have a couple in here. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I wouldn't trust a referral from someone who I'm just really good friends with, just because I'm really good friends with them. I want to know like your financial situation and why I should be trusting your referral. But what I came across the most was like the fiduciary standard. Like, that is that as trustworthy as it sounds? Because it seems like anyone who's operating truly under that.
Only if they get caught.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is there somebody back there monitoring all this activity unless you notice that something's wrong or you aren't happy? So, I mean, there is a fiduciary duty. I mean, as an attorney, I have to take it very, very seriously. You know, we are open to lawsuits. We are open to being disbarred and losing our license. And I think some people might take it seriously more than others. I think that's a personal integrity issue. Yeah.
I have one similar type question, if we have time. We have a financial planner and we've been working with him for a couple of years. He's actually a friend too, that we like hang out on the weekends with and stuff. And so maybe not the smartest choice, but we know him and we trust him. However, we always, my husband and I are always asking him like, well, is he really doing what he's supposed to be doing for us? Cause we don't know, like if I call him or whatever, need help with something, he'll, you know, he's responsive and all that. But if I don't, I don't really ever hear from him. So I'm like, what are you really doing for us? So I guess it's, how do you know if your financial planner is really helping you out, basically?
Yeah. I would get a second opinion. A lot of advisors aren't going to charge you to meet with them and ask them questions. If you're open with sharing your investment portfolio with them, you know, and just see if you like what they have to say. You know, your financial advisor probably won't find out about it. Well, he might, I don't know, but it's totally fine because it's your money. Right. So I would say, you know, shop around, get another opinion. You know, is he, does he work with a brokerage firm or is he with an insurance company?
Okay. He's with a brokerage firm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would look around, and similar to, you know, what we were just talking about, like ask people like, who do they use? You know, it's kind of tough because he's in your friend group. So you have to be careful with that.
Yeah. But everybody in our friend group knows that we use him, so it'll be fine. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think also, educate yourself too. There's a lot of tools out there. And the other piece that I'm going to go through, I'm not sure, Jessica, if you want us to, I don't want to totally cut you out of this call. There's another piece that I can walk you guys through, and it shows you, where you can place your assets and, different reasons for doing so, having proper diversification. There's a lot of unknown variables that we have to account for. We can't control taxes. We can't control inflation. We cannot control the market. And so is your portfolio set up in a way that it is safe from anything that happens out in the real world that we have no control over? And so that is something that I work on with my clients. If you feel, you know, maybe you need to just have a conversation with your friend and ask, you know, what happens if taxes go up? How is that going to look when I'm retiring? Or am I going to be protected against market fluctuations if I want to retire in 15 years? Like, how is it set up so that I have safeguards and that I'm properly hedging in these scenarios? So maybe a candid conversation with your advisor friend, or, you know, going and shopping around, and, you know, I think listening to calls like this and educating yourself, that's also a really good way to go about that as well.
Cool. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah, no, it does. Definitely. Thanks.
If I could just add something in there, since Paige, I would love for you to like continue on, because I think what you have going is super helpful for this audience. So, but I'll just contribute my 2 cents here and offer that when you're sitting down with your financial advisor, or when you're sitting down and you're planning, you know, what your investment strategy is going to be, I think it's really, really important. It's a critical step to make sure that you're identifying what your benchmarks are, what your goals are, your targets, and that you're revisiting those on a regular basis to see where your actual performance is coming up against those targets. So that'll be like your first indicator. Number one, like, hey, I'm not on track with what I expected to be. So what's going on here? Or, you know, understanding what, you know, what markets you're involved in, just to have like a general awareness so that when you're hearing things about the market and whether the market is performing well or it's, you know, not performing well, and then you look at your portfolio and you see, you know, I thought like the real estate market was booming and how am I losing all this money in real estate? That doesn't make sense. You know, challenge your investor to answer those questions and lay out, you know, how you got from where you are and like where the gap to your target is.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's super helpful, because that's one thing I've been wondering. I'm like, why don't we sit down at least once a year and revisit all that stuff? And so I think it's definitely time to ask for that and sit down with them. So. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's really important, you know, just because you're using a financial advisor to support you through your investment process, you are not turning over your responsibility to your financial advisor. You're still responsible for meeting those targets and making sure that those things are on track.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yep. I think that's really good input, Jessica. You do need to check in with your goals. You need to actively monitor it. It's not a set it and forget it just because you have a financial advisor. I mean, sometimes you might have that where you don't have to check in for a couple of years, but you really do need to actively take a look at your performance, take a look at your goals. Has anything changed? And monitor what they're doing with your funds, because it is your money. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so Jessica, do you want me to keep moving or do you want to go? This next piece takes about 20 to 25 minutes.
Yeah, so maybe we can take a quick poll, because Paige has a really awesome presentation about asset allocations. And I heard several people acknowledging that they were seeking some assistance and understanding that. So I think it could be really valuable. And my presentation, I'm going to share after the call, regardless of whether I speak on it or not. It's more of an investing, like tips to get started, like 101 topics. So if you're not familiar with investing, or if you're not currently participating in investments, these are helpful definitions and concepts to help you get started, but which I'm more than happy to speak on. But just my general sense of this crowd's interest, I think that Paige's presentation would be super valuable to continue with right now. Anyone want to switch over to the basics, or does anyone want to switch over to the basics? You can raise hands. If not, we'll continue on with Paige. Okay, cool.
All right, here we go. Awesome. Well, really awesome feedback. And it sounds like this next piece is really going to help a lot of us understand, are my assets in the right place? Where can I be investing? And again, this is very dependent on your own individual goals. So somebody who is close to retirement or at retirement, this might not apply as much, but I'll show you in the model how we adjust for that. All right, let's get the share screen. Okay. Oh, is that the right one? Can you guys see my screen? Let's see here. Let's try this again. All right, can you see my screen? That works? Okay, perfect. All right, so this next tool, it's called the Macro Asset Perspective. So this is part of the EKG that we just went over. This was also designed for doctors back in the 80s, and I'm going to try not to go too fast through it, but if you guys need me to slow down, just go ahead and raise your hand, and I will slow down. So it's a visual demonstration. It's designed to give you a visual picture of where your assets can be placed and why. So we have what's called vertical diversification, and that's going to be the safe, the moderate, and aggressive arenas. So a lot of you are probably familiar with this. If you've spoken to a financial advisor or a stockbroker or an accountant, they're going to talk about these three areas of diversification. So why is it a good idea to have this type of diversification? So one way to look at this is, you have your above-the-line assets, which are also called paper assets, and you have below-the-line assets, which are real wealth. And the paper assets are referred to as paper assets because their value is not fixed until the time you actually sell them. So if you have a 401k that has stocks or stock mutual funds, you're going to notice that the value is moving up and down depending on a variety of factors, and those are typically not within your control. And then assets below the line represent stable or real wealth, and their values typically don't go down, but they're going to remain relatively fixed and pay some type of interest or dividends. Now, how much you have above or below the line is going to depend on your age, what your risk tolerance is when it comes to investing, and also how long you have for these investments. What's your holding period? But generally speaking, the older you are, the more you might have below the line in the safe arena. So the Wall Street rule of thumb actually suggests that you have a percentage of assets equal to your age below the line. So if you're 20 years old, you might have 20% below the line and 80% aggressive. If that's switched, if you're 80, you might have 80% down below and 20% at risk. So one of the main goals of having vertical diversification is to manage risk, but it's also we want to change these paper assets into real stable wealth. So another concept, another diversification concept is horizontal diversification. And this one's a little bit newer. It's been around for a few decades, and it's very prevalent today because of our current tax climate and the economy. That's why we have six boxes on here instead of three. So it's pretty easy. There's only two types of tax treatments when it comes to savings and investments. We have pre-tax and after-tax. So what do I mean by pre-tax? So that's going to be your 401k, a deductible IRA if you have that, pension, Social Security, that is a pre-tax investment. So with these programs, you're going to be putting money away and investing it before it's taxed. Everything else is going to go on the after-tax side. So for years, we've been told, and this is something that I was told when I was a kid, we should put everything we can on the pre-tax side. We need to pump up our 401ks and anything else considered pre-tax. When I got my first job, I was 16 years old. I was a courtesy clerk at Albertsons. And my dad told me, put as much as you can in your 401k. And I asked him why. And he said, you need to save for retirement. And so that was it. Okay, 401k, that means retirement. And that's how it worked for him. When he was accumulating money, he did the same thing. And it worked out great for him. So when these 401k plans first came around in the 1980s, this is a little bit of history, the top tax bracket back then was 70%. And there were 15 tax brackets at this time. So if you were working at a $100,000 income, you would be in a bracket of 59%. So the thought was for people like my dad and people working during this time, they're like, hey, I don't need $100,000 in income. I could live off of $80,000 and I could put the rest away. And now they're drawing out that $80,000 income at 22%. The tax brackets have gone down, taxes have gone down, and it worked for them perfectly. They deferred in a larger tax bracket, in a higher tax bracket, and they're paying today in a lower tax bracket. Today, we are in a historical low in the United States. Our taxes are lower than they've ever been, our federal taxes. If you live in the state of California like I do, it doesn't really feel like the taxes are low. They are quite high, but federally, we are actually in historical low as far as our tax, our income tax goes. So today, if a couple moves from $100,000 to $80,000, they move down zero brackets. And that's because there's only seven tax brackets today, and the top bracket is 37%. So it's a different climate than it was back in the 80s when we were told to pump everything into the pre-tax plans. So how do we deal with this problem? Well, a lot of people are suggesting, and history would seem to predict, that our taxes are going to go up in the future. So we could be deferring today at 22 or 24%, and we'll be paying when we retire at 30, 40, 50%. So that's a real possibility in the future with the way things are in our climate right now. So how do we deal with this problem? So don't go cancel your 401k. The 401k is an amazing place to accumulate wealth if it's done properly. If you have proper diversification between the pre-tax and the after-tax assets, you can still gain a lot from this 401k plan. So here's the strategy that we use. So let's assume you want to take $80,000 of retirement income annually. If you're pulling it out of your pre-tax bag, it's going to be 100% taxable income. So it's going to be fully taxed as ordinary income, which makes sense because you haven't paid taxes on the money that went in or the money that's grown, but you will be taxed at the prevailing tax rate when you're drawing the money out, which as we know is an unknown factor and it could be potentially high. And so the thought is, what if you're drawing $40,000 from each side, one from the pre-tax and one from the after-tax? Your tax bracket is going to be significantly lower on the pre-tax side, and that's going to put you today in 12%. That's one of the lowest tax brackets that exist. And then you're pulling the $40,000 out from the after-tax side, so you're still living off of that $80,000 income, but it's placing you in a lower tax bracket. Now, ideally, all of the income on the after-tax side is going to be tax-free. There is a way to set that up so you can have a tax-free flow of income coming out. And it's not an automatic thing, but there are some vehicles that you can use, such as Roth, that'll help you accomplish these tax advantages when you're pulling the money out. So with this, if we have 0% tax on the tax-free side and 12%, that's giving us a cumulative total tax burden of 6% on $80,000 in income. So, that's this tax strategy that we use as far as, you need to see where your assets are and where they're going to be coming out during that distribution phase. All right, so the next side of this is, how do we accomplish this? So when we're looking at We looked at the horizontal diversification, right? We want to take money out of the after-tax side and the pre-tax side. But what about the vertical diversification? Where do I want to put my aggressive investments? Where do I want my safe investments? And so on this part, we're going to focus on the pre-tax side above the line. So we're going to put all of our pre-tax assets above the line. And I'll show you why we want to do this. So when we're looking at safe assets, what does the S stand for? The S stands for safety. How about with a money market or a checking account? Our advantage there is that we have liquidity. That's another advantage associated with the safe assets, is we can access that account if we need to. The money is there the next day. And then there's one more advantage with below the line assets, and that's tax advantages. So these are the three perks. These are the three advantages of having these safe below the line assets. It's safety, there's liquidity if we need to draw it out, and we can also get tax advantages from these. So on the pre-tax side, do we need tax advantages? No, we actually don't need to use tax advantages such as a tax-free muni bond. We don't need these on the pre-tax side because the pre-tax plans are going to be taxed according to the plan. They're not taxed according to the investments. So if the plan has a tax-free muni bond inside of it, it's still going to be taxed coming out because the plan, the whole 401k or whatever investment vehicle you have, it's going to be taxed according to the plan. Now, liquidity. Do we need liquidity inside an account that we're not going to touch for 20, 30 years? No. When we think of liquidity, we're thinking of having those assets available if we need to get to them. Well, if it's inside a pre-tax plan, we're not touching this money until we retire. We're not touching it for 20, 30 years. That's the whole reason why we invested into this pre-tax plan. So liquidity is not going to be a concern or a priority on the pre-tax side. Now, safety. Do we need safety? Yes, we do need safety inside of a pre-tax plan, but what kind of safety are we looking for? In order for these accounts to be safe, they need to outpace inflation. And if we're looking to outpace inflation, we want to look above the line. So I'll say this one more time. So the pre-tax assets, we're planning on holding these for a while. We're saving them to retirement. We're saving them until that time where we are drawing out that income that we've accumulated. So really, if we want to keep this money safe, we want it to outpace inflation. We don't want it to lose the value just because we have it sitting in an account. So we're not looking at safety with the pre-tax assets other than we're looking to outpace inflation. All right, so this is a good spot to interject something. It's what I call the first rule of accumulation, and it's take the free money. So on the pre-tax side, you might find free money inside your 401k. If you have a company that is matching your funds, I suggest that you contribute the amount necessary just to get the employer's matching dollars. So that is a really great place to accumulate wealth. If they're offering a match, say 3 for 3, or they're offering to match 3% if you contribute 6%, that is a good way to accumulate wealth and take the free money. So the key box in this approach is going to be on the pre-tax side above the line. That's what we're looking at for the pre-tax assets. So if we do only what I've said, then we're completely invested above the line, which creates a problem. We're not vertically diversified anymore. So how are we going to get that vertical diversification? We're going to get it on the after-tax side. Here we want to focus below the line. These attributes that had no or little value on the pre-tax side are going to be extremely helpful on the after-tax side. So just as the pre-tax side key box will be above the line, the after-tax side is going to be below the line. And below the line, we're going to build a foundation with tools that can provide us with tax-free income at retirement. Again, taxes are, it's an uncontrollable variable. We don't know where they're going to go. And so we want to have as much control as we can in retirement, because we've already accumulated this bucket of money. We can't go back and put more into it. So we want to have as much control over this income that we're taking out. So we're gonna fill this with tools and accounts and products that will provide tax-free income in retirement. And these are the three that we go into. We do muni bonds, cash value life insurance, and Roth IRAs. So if you're near retirement and you don't have a lot of time to accumulate wealth, you want to get money right away, I tend to focus on the muni bonds. Those are going to be a safe, typically lower rate of return investment or product. If you have time to accumulate and if you have a need for a type of life insurance or support for your family if something happens, we look at cash value life insurance. And then finally, there's the Roth IRA. And with the Roth IRAs, you can fund it with pretty much anything that you want. Right. So looking at rates of return, what kind of rates of return are you expecting to get with below the line assets? Long-term, historically speaking, 3%, 4%, 5%, that might be a pretty conservative estimate. But if you're not paying taxes on that 5%, it's going to be a taxable equivalent of about 7% or 8%, depending on your tax bracket. In other words, if you're earning 8% in the bank and you pay taxes on it, you might net 5%. So that's what I mean by the taxable equivalent. Okay. Now, people do and they should invest money above the line on the after-tax side. And I mentioned the Roth before. The Roth is an amazing tool for investing and it can be used below the line, but we typically tend to put it above the line because we're hanging on to these Roths for a long time. And just as we looked at on the pre-tax side, if you are able to hold on to an investment for a long time and you plan to, you need to outpace inflation. And the way you're going to find that is in the market. So we generally prefer to fund these Roth IRAs with equity investments. So we just need to make sure that we have enough assets below the line to justify adding more assets above the line. Another really great tool, if you have it, is the employee stock purchase plan. So that's going to give you a discounted price for company stock. So, and aside from those two, when it comes to this after-tax above the line side, we're looking for growth. We really want to invest in assets or vehicles that are going to give us growth. So we're looking at equity markets. That could be the stock market. It could be real estate, buying a second home. That's going to count as this after-tax above-the-line asset as well. Gold, business ventures. I have a client who has about $15,000 in sports memorabilia, and that counts as an above the line after tax asset. So that is all playing into your overall assets. All right. So one of the goals with having these above the line and below the line assets is eventually you want to take your capital gains from the aggressive component and you want to funnel it down into the stable or real wealth. So it's called the funnel approach, and this is where you're turning your money gains into real wealth. So, and Jessica touched on this. One of the best tools that you can use for this is called an annual asset reallocation. And what this does is it takes a look at where you are currently as far as your allocation goes. What are your goals? If, for example, in this screen right now, say we have a 50-year-old, they're going to be vertically diversified 50% above the line and 50% below the line. So what happens when the market's doing really well and they have 60% above the line? What they're going to do is they're going to sell off those investments when they're high and funnel them down into the real stable wealth. It works the opposite in the down market. You want to take assets from the real stable wealth, those safe investments, and you're going to buy low. And this is, it is difficult to time the market. I know that was mentioned earlier and I don't recommend it. But if you are looking at your overall asset planning on a regular basis, which you should be, this is the approach that you're going to take. You're going to like I said, funnel down from the investments to the safer assets when the market's high, and then you're going to buy low when the market is low. All right. So how do you determine how much you should have on each side, pre-tax, after-tax? And this is going to vary depending on how much income you plan on having in retirement. And we're almost done here. This is just the last piece. A lot of people choose to do 50-50, and this is reasonable for many people, but there are situations where we might want to adjust these numbers. If you're expecting to have a lot of income in retirement, say you make $400,000 now and you want $300,000 in retirement, you probably don't want $150,000 coming out of the pre-tax side because that's not low income and it's probably going to be taxed in a higher bracket. So you might want to have 30% pre-tax and 70% after-tax. Conversely, if your household income is $30,000 and you hope to retire on $20,000, it's probably not going to make a big difference what how much you have on either side because you're always going to be in one of the lowest tax brackets that exists. So pumping up the 401k and the pre-tax plans won't make a huge difference because your tax bracket isn't going to change when you're in retirement. All right. And as I said, you know, in most cases on the pre-tax side, we're going to focus above the line. So for a 50-year-old, say they want 50% above, 50% below, they might have 50% pre-tax above the line, 50% tax after tax below the line. For a 25-year-old, they might do 25% above the line, 25% below on the after tax. And that's going to give them a cumulative 75% above and 25% below. And what this does is it makes sure we're taking care of the vertical diversification. They have properly allocated between the safe investments and the risky investments, but they're also looking at the tax side too. Are they going to have too much, you know, income coming out in retirement? Is that going to drive up their tax bracket? And so this is really a good way to visualize and see, you know, there are different areas of diversification that you need to consider. I think that, you know, this is a really wonderful tool for somebody that is interested in alternative investments, or say they have a couple second homes or a business and they want to make sure that they're properly allocated to the safer investments. And as Jessica said, you know, one of the best things that you can do is to take a regular look at what the performance is of your investments. Sit down with your advisor, ask him, you know, or her, you know, what do my safe investments look like? Do I have municipal bonds inside of my pre-tax plan? What are the tax consequences going to be of that coming out? So it's a really good way to educate yourself and empower yourself in understanding, you know, I need to have diversification vertically and horizontally. And it really is going to help, you know, in any type of climate that you have, whether taxes go up, is the market going to be rocky? What's going to happen with my business? You want to make sure that in retirement, you're going to have sufficient money to pull out from different buckets, depending on the climate. So that is the macro asset perspective. Again, it's different for everybody. Your numbers might be different. You might have, you know, heavy on the after-tax side, which is awesome. One of my friends is a former pro baseball player and they don't get any pensions. They don't get 401k. They had a 401k, but they're so broke when they're getting paid as a baseball player. He didn't contribute. And all of his investments are after tax. He started a business and, you know, it's a really good plan for him to pull out money in retirement. So that's the strategy. I hope that was helpful and I hope it made sense. And I think now we can go ahead and open it up for any questions or comments. Jasmine put her hand up.
Oh,
was that a like hi or did you have a question?
No, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. That was wonderful. The visual is really nice to see. So I have a few questions, but I'll just go with one and then everyone else can kind of chime in. So one of the things that you said that I always have trouble understanding when you're talking about, your allocations, it was one of your slides where you wanted to be, say, 60-40, but when this became too high and you have to sell some of it so that you keep the 60-40 split in your vertical allocation, what do you mean by that? You mean 60-40 as in like, say you have $100,000 invested, there's 60,000 here and 40,000 here. And when this is worth, like, I don't know, what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, you could have it adjusted within one vehicle. So say you have a money, like, say you have a money market account and that's your only investments. Mm-hmm. And you are doing really well 1 year. You can have that vertical diversification within that vehicle. So if you have, say you have, you know, the majority is invested in bonds, but the market's doing, you know, really bad. So you want to shift some of those money invested in bonds into the market to get back to that 50-50. So if the market's not doing very well, it might take you to 40-60. So you're going to shift some of those assets up to get you back to the 50-50.
50-50 split is in like the percentage between equities and bonds.
Right. That's an example because, you know, equities tend to think of those as more aggressive and bonds are safer. Mm-hmm. So that's just a broad example. But it could also be, you know, some assets aren't as liquid. So if you had a very high gain on real estate, for example, you might not be able to funnel that down to the safe. So it really also depends on how liquid the assets are.
Right.
But you hopefully will have multiple buckets, you know, either a 401k pension or 403b or 457. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a Roth IRA, you can have, you know, multiple accounts below the line. And the idea is that you have that flexibility to switch in between if the performance isn't where you want it to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I followed you right up until the last part, but go ahead. Processing.
Okay. Yeah, it is a macro look at your assets. And so, you know, the idea works within an individual account, but you can look at it on a broader level because we do have all these assets that we're not considering. You might have a money market or, you know, some other type of account at a brokerage firm. Well, are they looking at your other investments? Are they looking at your real estate? Are they looking at the performance of your 401k? And so you really need to understand and have an awareness of where your assets are, what they're doing, and how they're invested. Oh, I can't hear you.
Maura has a question. I'm going to.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Go for it.
So going, and I might be like going way backwards. So this 60-40 or 50-50 or 70-30 or whatever is above and below, are we accounting for only our savings plans for retirement? Are we accounting for actual operating income? So in that liquid budget, right, in that real wealth budget, are we, you know, paying for a doctor or paying for braces or buying a new dress? Yep. Or, you know, like, is this all encompassing? Somebody say the word for me because I just messed it up. But or are we just, is this bucket just what we're maybe goaling ourselves towards, a retirement big bucket?
So that's a good question. What goes into the model? I typically keep a emergency fund separate from this. And there's two ways to think about, you know, you can have your emergency savings included in that MAP model, but then if something happens, it's going to take out of that safe investment. So you can either include that emergency savings or you can keep it out. I typically don't include your primary residence in this example, even though it is real estate, because when you retire, that's not something that you're saving for retirement. That's the house you're going to live in. So income from a second property absolutely would count in the model because that's income that you're continuing to get, and that's going to continue in retirement unless you sell or something happens. But it's, you really have to think, you know, we're looking at the money in retirement. What assets do I have in retirement? So if it is a checking account with $3,000 that's for emergency purposes only, I wouldn't count that. Good question. Oh, wow. Almost ready.
I have a question about ethical investing. So I think increasingly so these days, thankfully, there is a large concern and a huge priority for voting with our dollars, right? And voting with where and what we're investing in. And I'm curious to know if you have any suggestions around how to go about that, like how to know where to ethically invest, or are there like ethical financial advisors where, you know, you only invest in like B Corps and stuff like that?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this, Jessica? Or?
Yeah, I can jump in here. Yeah, I love this question. And I saw it from several participants in the survey that I did way back earlier this year. And it prompted me to ask around a little bit and do a little bit of research. And I learned myself that there's kind of like a shift emerging because of all these wonderful millennials that are insisting on investing on sustainable or ethical investments. And it's causing a new kind of rating criteria to develop, which is, it's called the ESG criteria, or the environmental, social, and governance criteria. And there are some rating companies, I think, I don't know, there's like four that I've heard of so far, that are issuing ESG ratings on different companies and stocks, mutual funds, ETFs even, so that people can have a sense of what they're investing in and whether they're supporting these criteria. And so not all companies are going to meet, you know, high ratings in all criteria, but it is something that I think is really interesting to know that's out there, something to watch out for in the future, and something to start asking for. The more that the market starts asking for ethical and sustainable investing, the more that these types of you know, observations, considerations, and demands will come to fruition. So I would say start by looking for ESG ratings and finding companies that align with your values, and see if you can, as long as they're a well-performing company, see if you can invest directly in their stock, or speak with your financial advisor and ask if they can skew your portfolio towards companies that have ESG criteria ratings.
Awesome. Thank you so much for looking into that after that last call, Jess, and then circling back around to Melissa. Yeah. And I really appreciate that. That's so, to me, that's really inspiring and exciting to know that that's going on. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. Paige, did you have any other thoughts on that topic?
No, you know, I think it's good to consult your financial advisor. They should have some knowledge of, you know, individual investments, and it is something that they've started to enhance. I know we use something called Morningstar for our investment research, and they've actually started to adjust the ratings to account for ethical investing. And so I haven't experienced it a whole lot just yet. I actually haven't had a client ask me that yet. But it is something that I see the market and the industry is starting to shift towards. Yeah.
Okay, well, we are a minute from time, and I just want to acknowledge that I didn't give my presentation. but that's totally okay. I mean, I think this discussion was super, super helpful. It was really appropriate for the audience. And hopefully there are a lot of takeaways. My presentation, as I said earlier, is more on the kind of intro to investing, like refreshers on the basics or introduction to the basics and terminology and different investment products and what they actually mean, like what is a stock, what is a bond, what's a mutual fund. So if there are people on this call or people that listen to this call later that have those types of questions, I am still more than happy to talk about that. But what I am going to do is post my presentation in the Facebook page so that you have access to that. And maybe some of it is, you know, stuff you already know. Maybe for those of you that are already investing, it's stuff that you didn't realize that you didn't know yet, or just good refreshers, good reminders. So thank you, Paige, for the presentation today. It was so awesome.
Thank you for my patience and giving me the space. And I apologize. I ran over. I talked more than I had timed myself earlier.
No, it's awesome. It was wonderful.
Super informative. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And if anybody has any questions or they want to talk one-on-one, I'm totally happy to do that. You can just reach out and we can set something up.
Awesome. Thank you, Paige. So appreciated. Thank both of you. Thank you so much. I know that we're at time, so if you need to hop off, anybody, feel free to hop off. But I always love to do a round of takeaways, and I'm always fascinated by what stands out to each person. So if you can hang for a few extra minutes, ladies, I'll be doing a takeaway round right now. Does anyone need to hop off that would like to go first for takeaways and share?
Okay. I would.
Hi, Lauren. Yeah, go ahead, Lauren. Go ahead.
So I apologize. I ended up coming on about 30 minutes late, so I think missed a lot of stuff as well, but there was definitely a lot of information that I did get. For me, I think the biggest takeaway is, honestly, I just need to start planning for my retirement. I think I have kind of been, I guess you can say, not as proactive in terms of that, but like, this is also like really good reminders, even just like looking at your annual wage and compared to like when you want to end up retiring and what age you're at currently and all of that kind of stuff. It's all important things that I, to be honest, I haven't really thought about a lot. Like I definitely have. So Lisa, I know I'm definitely going to be looking at your presentation because there's a lot of things that I do not know. I felt like this was one of those areas like, like politics that I just kind of ignore, which is not good. So I'm excited to like really start diving in and, you know, using a lot of the information that you guys have, sorry, my dog, that you guys have provided me and actually start, you know, making moves towards that.
Awesome. Thank you for that takeaway, Lauren. Yeah. And I think that that's a really common thing, especially for us hedonistic millennials or ex-geners, where we're like, oh, I'll just worry about it later when I'm, you know, actually making some real money or whatever. And then all of a sudden we're 40 and we're like, shit. So I think it's really great that these conversations are happening and that we have, you know, the sisters in the tribe who are willing to walk us through this stuff. And the earlier, I mean, and I'm, you know, guilty as charged, but the earlier that we can get on top of this and start learning about it, the more it's going to benefit us. So I'm glad that you spoke to that, Lauren. Thank you. Hi, Callie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Callie's very vocal right now.
It's okay. I'm going to put you on mute.
Okay, bye.
Awesome. More takeaway?
It's so great. I think that, for one, I know we start with gratitude, but I'm so grateful that, you know, to get my Rosie the Riveter, like, cap on, but the fact that we're even having this conversation, the fact that we're a group of women in a time where we can be empowered enough to say, this is something I'm taking control of. It's not scary. All I have to do is educate myself and work on it and be disciplined about it. And I don't need anyone else to do it for me. Not that Paige and Jessica, you don't have hugely valuable insight because it's your profession, but the fact that it's accessible to us is amazing. Like, it's kind of amazing, right? Like, that's badass. So, yay. And the fact that we're privileged to be able to say, you know, to talk in these big numbers. Like, I look at my, you know, 15-year-old, 18-year-old artist self and couldn't even imagine thinking $1.2 million. Like, I need $1.2 million to retire. Like, that's crazy. It's crazy. But it's also when Paige said, does that number scare anybody? Or did anybody think that that was, you know, unrealistic? Like, not one of us was like, oh my God, you know, like, so Awesome. Yay. Woo, woo, woo to the team and the tribe. Yay. Because I think we're all worth it. And I'm thrilled that this is around us to pull from. So thank you. And I mean, I don't know if any of that's a takeaway except for that we fucking rock. So there you go. That's my takeaway. Yeah. We rock. Yes, indeed. Rosie the Riveter. Wow. Yeah.
Thank you, Maura. That was awesome. Totally. Yeah. It's so empowering to be having these conversations. And they're happening increasingly more and more and more in the kind of like female space right now, and like the podcast land and like a lot of personal brands that are happening. I'm actually going to turn one of the modules, not of the program, but in our Facebook group or units, I think they call them. I'm going to make the topic finances so that anything that anybody has a question about or anything that we come across in a podcast, because I've been studying the shit out of this stuff for the past year. And I'm like, so I would love for us to all have a sharing space where we can continue this conversation and, you know, keep it going. So yeah, thanks for speaking to that, Maura. Ashley, take away.
Hello. Yeah. One, I need to have a check-in with my financial advisor. I feel a lot more prepared and informed to be able to do that. So thank you guys. All this information was super helpful. I feel very, I'm much more educated now to have that conversation with them. So I'm excited about that. And two, another aha or something that I've never really thought about before is when you were talking about where you take your money from when you're in retirement, like pre and post tax, and the fact that depending on what you have pre-tax, you want, and the tax rates at that time and all that time, you just need to have that into consideration so you are taxed less. So you're taking, if it's high tax rate or whatever, you're taking more from your after tax. And I've just never thought about it in that way. I've always just kind of, it's been an ashjack and I'll just pull from the retirement money when I'm retired or whatever. But no, you actually need to think about how you pull that money out. So that was pretty cool. And thank you for explaining that to me.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed or saw that the IRS actually just increased the maximum you can contribute to your pre-tax 401k. But they didn't touch the after-tax side, surprisingly. I think that might be an indicator that they anticipate taxes are going to go up. So they are trying to make people defer now so that they're paying taxes on that money when the brackets and the taxes are higher. Yeah. So that actually just happened, I believe, yesterday. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a real thing, and the IRS really wants your money.
Awesome, thanks for that. I mean, not awesome that they want our money, but thank you for your share.
Awesome that we know.
Awesome that we know, exactly. Yes. Yes. Jasmine, take away.
Yeah. Well, thank you both first for being here tonight. I'm really grateful that Fawn, you're connected with them and that you were both willing to come on and share, because it's really helpful for those of us that feel like even if we know something, we know nothing. I second also what Ashley said, in that I never thought about the retirement money coming from anywhere than just a big bucket. Like, this is what I saved. That's it. I'm just going to pull from that. And I think honestly right now I'm just feeling the most grateful to be able to talk money and this with other people who are, you know, willing to be educated and learn, because I find that I want to talk about everything that's a stigma and money is one of them. And it's what I'm like most obsessed with talking about intellectually. And just nobody wants to open up or have that discussion. And I just see it in such a totally different light. Like, your money doesn't affect me at all. So you could tell me you have $5 million. It's not going to change my life. So why can't we talk about it? It's this weird, I guess, emotional component that makes us feel better or worse, or we compare it to each other. And I'm surrounded by people that are so, I don't know, self-conscious about that. And I don't feel worse about myself when I'm around somebody who has more money than me. I just am, I'm fired up to learn how they have more money than me. And like, can I learn from you and figure out what you're doing? And I don't know. improve and grow. So I appreciate the time to be able to talk about it. And I would love to have a financial page or spot to share, or even I just made a note with Paige, I'll probably be reaching out to you if you don't mind, but also more in Ashley, like you guys are here and I see your faces and maybe we could connect since we're interested and we can get a little group going. Cause I haven't quite done that from Fawn's instructions yet to try to connect with specific people in our tribe to see if we, you know, can get on the same page. So I'm just thankful that this happened.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Jess. Yeah. I really appreciate that you spoke to the like the stigma aspect of it, right? It's like, don't talk about sex, don't talk about politics, don't talk about religion, and don't talk about money. And it's like, what the effing F is that all about? Thank you so much, patriarchy. Like, you know, so
how's the weather then?
Yeah, right. How's the weather? Let's all just lie to each other and be superficial. That's not what this crew is about at all. So I appreciate that we're all interested in this stuff. And I will create a section in the Facebook group for us to have these conversations. And I look forward to seeing what happens there for sure. Yeah. Jess, Paige, did you have any feedback for anybody's takeaways? That's part one of my question. Part two is I'd love to hear your takeaways too.
Okay. All right. This is really good feedback. You know, typically when I present this, it's either one-on-one or in person. So I'm pretty new to doing the video side. So sometimes it's hard to gauge people's responses. So I'm really glad that you you guys are grateful for this talk and feel more empowered. You know, it's good to hear. I mean, it's not good, but it's helpful to hear that you hadn't considered you know, where you're taking your money out of in retirement. And I think that's really common. People don't really consider it at all. So I really appreciate you mentioning that. And then the stigma as well, you know, people are more comfortable talking about sex than they are finances. And I think that's a real statistic. And so I really appreciate your feedback and you bringing that to light. And my takeaway, I'm just really appreciative and I'm grateful to have you guys and to be able to share this knowledge with you and to have the response that I got. I was so nervous before. I'm always nervous before phone calls, and I actually thought it went really well and that, you know, you guys were awesome. And I just felt really comfortable and really passionate and excited to give you guys this information. So I'm super grateful for the space and for whatever divine power gave me the ability to not totally screw up while I was speaking, just being candid. So just thank you all. And thank you, Fawn and Jessica. And just the process of getting this call together was really awesome and really helpful for me in growing and also working with Jessica. And I really want to do more of this with the group and explore the ethical investing and also work on that Facebook section for finance as well. I think that's going to be really awesome and really helpful for all of us.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You did great. Like you, I'm like, you are really, really good at what you do. You're so knowledgeable. That was amazing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I just heard you say that you'd love to continue this conversation with the group. And I'm like, maybe we should have quarterly financial planning calls with Jessica and Paige.
Anyways, a lot of material. So that might be a good idea. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll bribe you ladies maybe to keep that Jess, reflections, takeaways.
Yeah. So, Paige, you totally rocked it. You were not expecting to take on the full hour and a half. You totally did. And it was amazing and super informative. So thanks. Just for a little bit of background. I did a presentation on paying down debt earlier in the year. And through that process, I took a survey and just trying to understand like where the tribe's interest was on financial matters. And two major themes stood out to me. One was, I need help figuring out how to pay down debt. And then the other theme was like, I don't understand investing at all. Like, what is it? I don't get it. And so paying down debt portion, I was like, okay, I've got this, like, this is totally in my wheelhouse. And then the investment portion, I am not a personal financial advisor. I work in or worked in the corporate space and capital investments. So, so on an individual level, this was kind of like new territory for me. I do it for myself, but I definitely don't do it for other people. So in Fawn's understanding of me, she, knowing that I didn't want to give advice that I wasn't qualified to give advice for, she remembered that Paige is totally qualified to give this advice. And so she helped to connect us. And it's been, as Paige mentioned, a really, really nice and fruitful process for us both. And so I've really enjoyed working together with you all. And I, for a takeaway, I love the turnout for tonight, the interest and the topics and the caliber of the questions and the attention, and that the fact that all of these women are really invested in themselves and going to take that forward to create the best life, fun, and purpose that we can for ourselves. So yeah. Awesome. Thank you all for the night.
Yeah, thank you, Jess. Thanks for sharing that. It's great to remember like the context, and I love that you just shared that with the rest of the ladies of like how this all happened. So yeah, ladies, let's continue the conversation. I'll create a unit in the Facebook group tomorrow. Call recording will go up. Jessica's slides will go up, and it sounds like both of them are open to any questions that you ladies may have, either privately or in the group. So let's continue things. And my takeaway is how grateful I am for all of our courage, because I think that this, especially if investing, is scary as shit for all the reasons that we mentioned earlier on the call, right? The not knowing who to trust. Like, it's our precious blood, sweat, and tears that is on the other equivocal side of this, like, cash, right? Oftentimes. And the fact that we're courageous enough to say, let's have a conversation about it and learn about it, instead of just like, you know, sticking our heads in the sand or giving our money to a financial planner and then just like, you know, hoping that everything goes well. It's badass. And I'm proud of each and every single one of you for facing this topic and being willing to dive in and explore it. And anyone who's listening to this call recording in the future, let's not hide from this, because it's not going to do us any good. And part of our hell yes life, a big part of our hell yes life, if I'm being honest, is probably money. So let's get smart about it. Awesome. All right, ladies. Thank you all so much for being here. And let's make some money and be smart with it. Yay. Thank you, Jess. Thanks, Paige. Thank you all for being here. Good night, everybody.